Welcome to A World of Good podcast. My name is Andrew Gale. So grateful to be with you again for another episode. This is another one of our special episodes that we're doing as a video podcast. Not a live podcast, but a video podcast done in this fancy, fancy studio.
Very fancy.
What I love about studios is that it's really fancy, like from your angle, but I can see all of the cameras and cords and everything else, which just makes me nervous. But it's good to be with good friends in this conversation to hear about what's happening with the Church of God in Africa. Thanks for joining us for the special podcast. We're doing a campaign right now called Give for Good. If you want to know more information about that, you can go to our website, chogglobal.org/giveforgood. We'll help you take a look at that and learn about ways to support and care for the Church of God around the world. John and Gwen, we're so grateful you are here. This is John and Gwen Johnson. They're joining me, the regional coordinators for Africa, but I almost said also my neighbors, which is probably on my list of importance. Neighbors is first, and then, I'm grateful you're my neighbors.
Yeah.
But we're so grateful to have you to share a little bit about your experiences and connecting with the Church of God in Africa, just giving us an update of what's going on. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Honored.
So to start, can you share just an overview of the Church of God, specifically the Church of God in Africa? Help me understand where we are. What are churches like? If I have no concept of that, what information can you tell us about it?
The Church of God is presently active in 15 countries in sub-Saharan Africa.
Okay.
They're located in the Southern Bloc, which we refer to as the Southern Bloc because there is a country called South Africa. Yeah. And then there is West Africa and East and Central Africa. And they are vastly different from each other. The languages, the culture, the geography, the food.
Yeah.
Very different.
I think that's really helpful reminder. You said sub-Saharan Africa, and I think that gets confusing for people as well because Egypt is technically part of Africa, but we lump it in as part of Europe and the Middle East because the culture is much more part of that Middle Eastern or Mediterranean culture, right? And so when you talk about sub-Saharan, that Saharan desert that kind of blocks the northern Africa from the rest of the rest of Africa. And so then we're looking at what's below the Saharan desert, and then you have West, East and the Southern Bloc that you guys and we have churches that are a part of.
Yes. Right. Yeah. All kinds of different languages and cultures in that area that you just mentioned. And it's not a small area.
No.
It's pretty significant.
And when you say languages, I mean, we're talking English, Swahili, but French.
Oh, for sure.
Portuguese.
And tribal languages as well.
Many. So. 3,000 languages.
Wow. It's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, so one of the challenges I think we face today in our culture is just the overabundance of information. I mean, news is nonstop. We can literally have news channels on 24/7. I'm mostly making up news because how do you keep a news channel on for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? But in the early months of 2025, I know it made my news cycle that I was watching about some conflict between the Democratic Republic of Congo, also called the DRC, and Rwanda. That there was some ongoing strife between those two countries. And it made headlines, but it was quickly overshadowed by some other issues. But I know that what we were hearing wasn't new. Like when I brought up that conversation with you a couple months ago about this, you know, one of the comments you made I thought was really good is that this isn't a new challenge that they're facing. This is an ongoing, longstanding, complex issue that had a flare-up, and then it made headlines because of that flare-up. Can you give us just a quick, to ask for a quick, when you're talking about a complex situation, but for people that have no concept of what's going on, can you help us understand some of what's happening there and then how our Church of God communities are affected by that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a pot on the stove, and it's always on. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the knob gets bumped and it sets that to boil. So it is complicated. You know, the thing that 24-hour news cycle is, it tries to make everything understandable and
simple.
A headline. It's just not. So there's, if you go all the way back, colonial powers kind of chose one group to support, one group to diminish, and that's the Hutus and the Tutsis. And if you think 30 years ago, there was a genocide. And so there's that stuff, and that has been going on. And so it's more than just land grab groups wanting this piece of land. But that's also part of it because it's the image that I share, which isn't biblical and it isn't right, I'm sure, but trying to get it, our heads around it is that, like, when God created the earth and he sent out his angels with all kinds of natural resources.
Yeah.
And apparently two clumsy angels dumped all their baskets of wealth into an area which really would be like two states or provinces right on the border between Rwanda and DRC. And that's what everybody's fighting over. $24 trillion worth of wealth.
Wow.
Minerals. Stuff that we use in our cell phones that we have to have or we don't have cell phones.
Yeah.
And so it's just very valuable. So it's ethnic, it's wealth, and everybody wants that wealth. It is land and it's power. Who gets to say? So it's so complicated. The thing is, with complicated things, when you come with answers and you say, oh, yeah, well, here's the answer. It's simple. It's clear. Those are always wrong answers. So and that's kind of, that's going
so
on.
So where exactly would we find that story in the Bible? Is that in 1 John 7?
Maybe 3 John, 4 John.
So how do we how are churches interacting in the midst of this?
You know, that's one of the most amazing things to me. And we have churches
on both sides, right?
On both sides, on all sides, because it's simplistic to say this is just Rwanda and DRC. Actually, it's Burundi, Tanzania, Uganda, all of those. It's a kind of a Great Lakes region in Africa. All of those are players right now. Either they're players that they're trying to command control over those resources, or they're trying to deal with refugees that have spilled out all over the place. And some of them are doing it kind of well, and some are not doing it well at all. And our church is in the midst of that. We have churches in those countries. And
even some of them on the borders.
People go back and forth across the borders because there are clearly defined entry and exit points. And then there's the rest of the border, which is very porous. And the church, the amazing thing to me is the church loves and serves one another no matter which side of the border you come from. I think our churches in Rwanda and in the DRC are modeling the love of Christ in remarkable ways in terrible situations.
Yeah,
and in Burundi as well, serving refugees who come, whoever comes, and at great risk.
Yeah,
because particularly in Burundi, they want refugees in refugee camps.
Yeah,
Burundi is the poorest country in Africa, trying to deal with their own issues, and now they have all these refugees.
Wow.
And the church is serving, and they're not looking at passports, you know? They're not looking at, like, are you one of our tribe?
Yeah.
They're just loving them, serving them.
I remember even a couple of years ago when we were in Tanzania, before this blew up just a couple months ago, but there was a specific prayer time set aside for the leader of Rwanda, Charles Nsengiyumva, and Noel Badamwete, who's the leader in the DRC, where they sat them next to each other and just prayed over them. I mean, as a reminder to me that this is an ongoing issue. They knew back then that there were challenges, you know, and it's simmered and come up. In the DRC, we've heard that there are families displaced. We put out some different notices to people about disaster relief. Can you talk about what's happening there?
Well, we've done immediate stuff, like just providing food, clothing, resources, because when people left as refugees, internally displaced people.
So there's people from the DRC that have left their homes, and we've heard like 700 to 1,000 families.
Families
that have all left to go seek refuge elsewhere, but within the same country, but away from where they had been living.
Right, and left everything.
Yeah.
And just recently, the M23, the Rwanda
backed
rebel group. Thank you. You know, they forced all those refugees to go home, but when they've gone home, they have nothing.
Yeah.
So we've done immediate, and now we're kind of shifting to provide some farming equipment and seed for the next crop, and just stuff to get them between where they are and where they need to be.
Yeah.
So I think we're doing some significant things.
That's awesome. We mentioned Noelle Bonamwete. She's the national leader for the DRC. We have a number of women that are in positions of leadership, which I think is wonderful to see across the African continent. But that also brings its own challenges. You know, so what challenges do women face in positions of leadership in Africa, and how can we support that work?
I've asked several of them that question because I'm obviously not an African woman on the ground working. And I got various answers, but one is finances, because a woman is supposed to care for the home and feed the family, and especially in those war-torn areas and those where there's drought and flood and famine, it's very, very difficult. The leader of Zambia is also a female, Reverend Miles Ndau. And we have some female pastors in Botswana. Mm-hmm. Not every country allows women to be in positions of leadership, and the women are discriminated against, and they're expected to take care of the home and their husband. Yeah. And in the DRC, I've been told that they believe it's a curse, kind of, for the men and the church and the family if a woman is in position. But 5 years ago, Reverend Noel was chosen as the legal representative. And she said in the last 5 years, five women have been ordained as pastors.
That's really cool.
In some countries, that is not happening. So it varies from country to country. Yeah, but they face many hardships, cultural views, and things like that.
Yeah. And a kind of a literal view of Scripture. So if women aren't supposed to speak, then they they aren't supposed to speak. And that's just a reality.
Yeah.
It's cultural and a particular view of Scripture.
Yeah. Going back to the Church of God in Rwanda, so that was the DRC. Rwanda, they're facing increased kind of governmental regulations to remain a recognized church in their country.
Yeah, and it's not just Rwanda. So Burundi, Rwanda, the DRC, Congo,
Zimbabwe.
And Zimbabwe as well. It's kind of a growing pressure.
Like Rwanda's led the way and these others are like, we want to be like that.
Seems like it, yeah. So the pressure to be officially recognized by the government.
Which means they have to have, I mean, it's different in each place, but things like a national headquarters, which has to include a certain amount of parking spots, size of the building, bathrooms. I mean, it's pretty significant what they're asking for.
I think one of the things that I know Reverend Guni in Zimbabwe would say, like, the government says we have to have a locked office where we can house the marriage certificates and birth and death certificates, because those are official government documents. And the government says if you're going to be a recognized church, you have to have a place that we approve that will hold these official papers.
And some of our churches meet under trees. I mean, some of them don't have buildings at all, much less a locked office.
Zimbabwe, all the churches, 56 churches meet under trees. And in some places where there are no trees, it's in the desert, they kind of in the shade of whatever structure is there. So they don't
have what are some of the obstacles? Is that the obstacle? Is it facilities? What are some of the challenges they're facing as they try to meet these governmental regulations?
Well, I'm stepping out here in the area of conjecture. I have asked that question, and you kind of get different answers. But I think governments are wanting to eliminate like pseudo churches that are false, people that are coming in and saying, I'm an evangelist and start a church, steal the money from the people and run away. So, I mean, that's the kind of the main statement that the government's, we're trying to protect our people from religious shysters. But the opposite side of that is that the church seems to want to get the numbers of church organizations down to a manageable size. Mm. And so there's kind of a proliferation of churches and denominations across Africa. And some of them are kind of a mixture of African religion and Christianity and so forth. So they're trying to get that down to a recognized group that they would say, okay, these meet our standards. our people will be protected. But then it kind of sifts into, well, we've got elections coming up. If you'd like to, you know, so there's that kind of stuff. It's just a wide range of reasons why.
That seems like a very complicated issue, and one that's probably going to be something that we're dealing with, we're walking with the church through for years and years to come, I assume. You know, one of the ongoing issues in Africa that we hear about is this cycle of flooding and drought that often leaves communities who depend on farming, subsistence farming in a lot of places, without sufficient resources, and can lead to, especially in those times, can lead to increased issues related to cholera, waterborne illness, that affect even more so children and the elderly. The Church of God in Zimbabwe has been working to kind of deal with some of those ongoing issues. Can you talk to us about what they've been doing and what that looks like?
So their restrooms before were just pits that were dug with mud brick around them and no tanks. Mm-hmm. And when the floods and the rain come, then those mud bricks just disintegrate. Mm-hmm. And the sewer just flows out, and then cholera outbreaks. So, you know, it's amazing when we actually ask people what their greatest need is. Sometimes we are surprised. And when Brother Gooney said it was latrines was their greatest need. So the Church of God has built numerous concrete toilets with tanks. Wow. And the story I like is there was an elementary school where people were shoved out of where they lived by the government and put out in the desert, and they have like tents, and their latrines had disintegrated, and they were going to have to close the school.
Oh, wow.
And the kids were going to have to walk like 20 kilometers round trip. I think it was even more than
that. No, it was 17 kilometers
one way. Yeah, so close to 20 kilometers one way. But the Church of God came in, built latrines, and now the kids don't have to walk to
the next
village.
And if we could show you a picture, it's really kind of crazy. So I visited lots of latrines in Zimbabwe.
And a lot of people go in when they go on vacation. Or go on that. That's not what they're going to get pictures of.
But the amazing thing is all these latrines are painted purple. I said,
very Lenten, right?
I said, Reverend Gooney, why are they painted purple? He said, the Church of God official color in Zimbabwe is purple. So when people see these purple latrines, they know that the Church of God has provided this this place of safety, really safety, for the community. And he said, it's like our signboard.
Okay, I love that.
That might be an idea for pastors struggling here in the United States.
That's a good thought.
Hey, I want to share one more thing.
Yeah.
This climate change cycle.
Yeah.
I in a recent conversation with the national leader in Zambia, she said that 80% of the people in Zimbabwe are food insecure.
Zambia.
Food insecure.
80% are food insecure. 80%.
Wow. Because they planted, they got wiped out. They planted their only reserve crop, and then it was scorched out. Mm-hmm. And so they have no backup.
Wow.
So 80%.
That's incredible.
And so trying to figure out how to help, it is just overwhelming.
Yeah.
It is overwhelming.
And the church is engaged in that, but that's overwhelming for a church to try to walk with its people through that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, you've given us lots to be thinking about and praying for, but if I can ask for one more question, it would be, is there anything more you would say? This is something I'd really love for people listening to be praying about, thinking about, as they spend time in prayer for our brothers and sisters in Africa. What would you want them to be reminded of?
I have an image. So I'm in Malawi. I'm visiting these rural churches in Malawi. And I noticed that outside every one of these rural churches is hanging in a tree, is like the big wheel of a truck. And I asked, after I saw it a couple times, what is that? And that's how they call the people to church. They bang on that wheel, and the sound is just, it has its own unique sound. I would like to bang on that wheel for us to pray for Africa. The problems, difficulties, hardships, obstacles, whatever, is overwhelming.
Yeah.
And they're needed certainly financial resources. And it's not that the church in Africa is just holding their hand out. I mean, they really are trying to find creative ways to serve one another. But I would ask that in the midst of all that weight, that we would lift up the pastors of these churches. I couldn't pastor there. I don't think I would fold up. I would wither and die. The responsibility that they carry for their people is great, and they themselves are dealing with the same issues. We just got a message, pray for this particular pastor's family, because he had died suddenly with some illness that no one knew what it was about. And so there's that wisdom to know how to deal with governments and tribal stuff and warfare, and that they would continue to have joy.
Yeah,
that's one of my. I talked about that tire, that wheel hanging from a tree. But another is this: being in Rwanda and worshiping with people, and when they come together, it is joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that like those don't compute. Those don't work for me. And yet they live it, and they live the joy in the midst of the suffering in a very biblical way.
Yeah.
If anything, we need to learn from Africa.
Absolutely.
How to put those two together. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. And we'll be praying for our brothers and sisters all across Africa, and especially the pastors as they walk with communities in really difficult situations.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter, at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.